Welcome to the Well Podcast. We hope that this message will help you grow in your faith and give you practical ways to strengthen your relationships. To find out more, visit thewell.ca.
Hey church, well you probably know this, that if you're going to exercise, you should warm up first. And so since we're going to exercise our hearts and our minds today, I thought we should warm up. Good? We good with that? So you don't even need to stand up. You can just stay where you are. But here's what I want you to do. Just put your hands on your head like this and say, what was I thinking? All right, ready? What was I thinking? All right, here's the next one. Okay? Put your palms up and you say, how did I miss that? Ready? How did I miss that? Yeah, feeling good, limber. Okay. And then this one, ready? Oh, everybody do that together. Oh, yeah, see? That's the sound of wisdom, or maybe wisdom after the fact, right? Like, we've all had decisions that maybe the next moment, the next day, the next year, or a decade later, we looked back on and we were like, what was I thinking? Or how did I miss that? Or why didn't I do that? Or like I said, sometimes the sound of like understanding is, oh, now I see. Oh, now I get it. Oh, now I understand. That's wisdom after the fact. And we've been in this conversation about wise choices. How do we actually not just have wisdom after the fact? I mean, we all have decisions that we're going to look back on and go, man, I would have chosen differently. Even if you're like, it wasn't a bad decision, but it was like, yeah, I could have made a better choice, or why didn't I make that choice? And that's fair, that's true, but how do we learn from that, and how do we actually begin to make wise decisions, to choose wisely, the many, many choices we have to make in our lives for better outcomes and fewer regrets? And if you're just joining us in this journey, or maybe this is your first time in church or first time in a long time, whatever, you can relate to that in whatever way, right? How do I have better outcomes and fewer regrets? Who doesn't want that? And we actually started this conversation, I kind of put this premise out to you and just saying, you know, oftentimes our decisions are motivated by or informed by things like what I want, like my desires, what I don't want, like what I'm afraid of, or I'm afraid of missing out on that, or I'm afraid of being alone, or I'm afraid if I do that, this will happen, or I'm afraid of what people will think, and that often motivates our choices. Sometimes we just make decisions based on information. Well, I weighed the pros and the pros outweigh the cons, or this just seems to make sense, so I'm going to do that. Or our decisions are informed or driven by kind of what our family thinks or how they made decisions about money, about time, about relationships, about whatever, jobs, school, or informed by the environment around us. And while that's common, that's normal, that's human, what we said was, hey, how do we get informed by wisdom? How do our choices get more motivated by wisdom? What does it mean to choose wisely? And so I want to actually end our series today. And if you're just jumping in, it's okay. You can go back on our podcast, on our website, and catch up on this process, especially if you're in the middle of a decision where you feel like you need wisdom. I want to land the plane with what I think is one of the most practical things that we can do in our lives to actually get more wisdom, but also one that is actually really hard to do. And so I'm going to be sympathetic about this. This is not easy, but it is practical and is something, hopefully, that as a community together, we're here as a community of a church, that we can grow in learning how to do this together to become a wise community. And so for that, I want to read a section from one of the, what's called one of the wisdom books in this library of scripture. We've referenced it a couple times during this series. And in fact, if you're following along on our Bible reading plan, you've been reading in this book called Proverbs. And I want you to listen to, because one of the things that is very poetic and clever about this book is it often personifies wisdom. Or like if wisdom was a person, what would they say? How would they speak? And I want to start here today because it paints this picture of like, again, what does wisdom do in our lives? But also, why is it challenging to get? And then we're going to get to what I think is, like I said, a very practical way of how this works itself out in our lives. So listen as we hear, and this part is written as the voice of wisdom speaking to us. Listen to what wisdom says. I love all who love me, says wisdom. Those who search will surely find me. I have riches and honor, as well as enduring wealth and justice. My gifts are better than gold, even the purest gold. My wages are better than sterling silver. I, wisdom, walk in righteousness, in paths of justice. Those who love me inherit wealth. I will fill their treasuries. The Lord formed me, wisdom, from the beginning, before he created anything else. I was appointed in ages past, at the very first, before the earth began. How cool is that? And so, my children, wisdom's children, listen to me, for all who follow my ways are joyful. Listen to my instructions and be wise. Don't ignore it. Joyful are those who listen to me, watching for me daily at my gates, waiting for me outside my home. For whoever finds me finds life and receives favor from the Lord. But those who miss me injure themselves. All who hate me love death. Wow. This is an incredible picture. Just in this few compact set of verses, all that wisdom offers and is, and some of the difficulty we might have in getting it. I just want to summarize it very quickly with a few statements. What did we just read? And this is actually found all the way through the book of Proverbs. What does wisdom say to us? First, that wise choices really do make your life and the lives of people around you better. Wisdom here is talking about riches and wealth. And they're saying, hey, just like someone who makes wise investments with their money ends up becoming a wealthy person, so is someone who makes wise investments with their life. They end up having a rich life. And they're not talking primarily, I don't think, about money, but just this idea of a life worth having, a life of worth, of weight, of value. Wisdom really can make your life and the lives of the people around you better. But I think secondly, implied in that, that wisdom is not primarily about, oh, how do I make decisions to get myself a better life or to get more wealth? That wisdom is actually about character. In other words, wisdom is about the kind of person we're becoming, not just the choices we're making. It uses words like righteousness. Righteousness just means true goodness, pure goodness, justice. The Bible talks a lot about justice, is that doing right on behalf of the poor, on the weak, on the marginalized, that makes everyone better. This is actually referring to character. Wisdom is about the kind of person we're becoming, not just the decisions we're making. This isn't like, hey, how to just have a better life. Yes, wisdom will give you a better life, but the life is who we're becoming. And in light of that, the stakes are high. Look at the very last verse here in verse 36. This is, it's poetic, but it's profound. All who hate me love death. In other words, if you hate wisdom, you're headed down a destructive path. And that's true even if we're not talking about moral choices, although it takes wisdom to make moral choices. You can make a whole bunch of choices that aren't wrong, but could really mess up your life, right? They aren't moral decisions, but they're wise ones. Right? And we've all been there in some shape or form. And that's what the writer says, is all who hate me love death. They're headed down. The stakes are high just because we're not talking about right and wrong. Wise and unwise, wise versus foolish, has high stakes. In another sense, it says, hey, wisdom's readily available. It says wisdom was made before anything else was made. And in other words, the rest of Proverbs says the whole world was made with wisdom. In other words, wisdom's embedded in the fabric of our earth, of life. It's everywhere, but you have to look for it. It's actually not easy to find. You have to search for it. You know, it says, hey, wisdom, like wait for wisdom, look for wisdom, listen for wisdom. There's all these encouragements. Listen, pay attention. Don't not listen. Don't ignore, because it's hard to find. You have to find it, even though it's everywhere. You have to look for it. You have to look for it like gold and value it. And it's easy to ignore it, to not hear wisdom's voice, or when you hear it, to go, man, I don't want to do that, right? Actually, you find all the way through Proverbs that there's a way in which I don't really want to hear this. Sometimes that's difficult to hear. And that is one of the marks of wisdom, is it's not always easy to hear. And I think maybe the most important thing, and this is where we're going to kind of camp out the rest of today. There's no such thing as a self-made wise person. There are no self-made wise people. In other words, wisdom's everywhere, but it's not just in you. It's not like, hey, you got this. Don't worry. Listen to your heart. Trust your gut. It's in you, and you'll probably end up making wise decisions. No. Wisdom is everywhere, but it's not just in you naturally. Maybe I can say this. You're not born with it. You got to get it. You got to acquire it. You got to find it. You got to search for it. In fact, in another chapter in Proverbs, it says it like this. Don't depend on your own understanding. Don't be impressed with your own wisdom. In other words, whatever understanding or wisdom you think you have, it's not enough. Don't depend on that alone. You need more. Don't be impressed by your own wisdom. It's like, oh, I'm good. I don't need anything else. Like, no, you do. And so this is where we want to get to for the rest of today. It's like, okay, so if we're not self-made wise people, how do we get wisdom? It would be easy if wisdom had an address, like in this chapter. It's like, hey, the writer says, oh, blessed are all who wait outside my house. Be like, okay, great. Where does wisdom live? Hey, wisdom. It's like the Beatles. Oh, I see them. You know, come over here. I have a question for you. Can I just knock on your door? It would be nice. But this is just sort of a poetic way of describing wisdom. But the truth is, over and over, Proverbs describes wisdom being exchanged, and if you look at through the whole book, in relationships. Not in this poetic sort of personified wisdom, but in actual relationships. And let me just give you a survey of the kinds of people that Proverbs describes that are we're interacting with all the time that have to do with getting, keeping, or not getting, or not keeping wisdom. There are different categories of people. One of the categories that wisdom mentions a lot, and the books of wisdom mention a lot, are fools. Now, fools, in the biblical account, are not dummies. It's not about intelligence or education. A foolish person doesn't think they need wisdom, or they don't look for it, or they ignore it. They don't value it. That's what a fool does. They're like, I don't need this. I'm good. The fool says, yeah, I got enough. I'm good. I can do this myself. Or they don't realize that they need more wisdom, or when they hear it, they don't follow it. The biblical idea of a fool is just someone who doesn't take God. Remember, we talked about wisdom being a God-like understanding of the world. A fool says, no, I don't need God's input. A fool lives as if there is no God, or if God has nothing of value for them. And so that's one of the categories of people, people who are fools, people who don't take God into account and don't think they need wisdom. But there are other categories. There are influencers. The writers of Proverbs describe the fact that we can be hanging around people who are making decisions, groups of people, environments, cultures, families, friend groups, work groups that are making decisions that because of our proximity to them, they end up rubbing off on us. Like they influence us just by the fact that they're the crowd or they're a group of people that we're close to, and they end up having an influence on our decisions. That's another group of people that are in this wisdom conversation. Fools, influencers, also tempters. There are people, apparently, who will are actively trying to influence you and I away from wisdom, trying to drag us into their choices. Hey, I'm going to go do something that I want to do, and whether or not I think it's foolish, even if I do, I want some company while I do it, because it'll make me feel better about this bad decision if I have some other people with me. That's a group, people who are actively trying to drag you down. Fools, influencers, tempters, and friends. Or what Proverbs uses, sincere friends, trustworthy friends, or if we can use this word, wise friends. These are the kinds of people that you want to be around to actually get more influence from them. Which is to say this, when it comes to wisdom, it's all about who you know. It's all about who you know. The famous entrepreneur and business leader and author Jim Rohn said it this way, you are the average of the five people that you spend the most time with. You're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. Now, whether or not that number is five or whatever, his point is exactly what the writer of Proverbs says. We are influenced, like wisdom is about who we know, the relationships that we have in our lives. And it actually goes on to say like, hey, in the midst of living life where we are surrounded by people who don't want wisdom, don't think they need wisdom, who live as if there's no God or godly wisdom to have, people who are just making decisions that may be influencing us by our proximity to them, people who are actually trying to drag us off the path of wisdom. How do we find friends? What are true, sincere friends? And this is key. If we are heavily influenced by the relationships that we have, if it's true that we are in some way the product of those relationships, if it's true that this is where wisdom lives, that we don't have it in us and we need to get it, friendships, relationships, wise relationships are one of the primary ways that we can get wisdom. Remember I said to you a couple weeks ago, there are five ways that God speaks to us. And where we landed was I said that the input and the wisdom of other people, that relationships, the scriptures tell us over and over that that's the most important. That's why Jesus didn't just write a book of teachings and give us a book. He formed a community of people to gather around his wisdom. And so relationships are paramount for us. And so what does it mean to have wise friendships or even to be a wise friend? Last week, we talked about that in the context of choosing a life mate, but I made the point saying, actually, this is about all of our relationships. Like, how do we cultivate friendship? And so I want to spend a little bit of time using three pictures of friendship that Proverbs gives us in actually another chapter, Proverbs 27, that as we are saying, okay, what does wise friendship look like? The first one we find in Proverbs 27, verse 17, and maybe you've heard this before, or maybe you didn't even know it was from the scripture, you just thought it was an idiom. It says this, as iron sharpens iron, so a friend sharpens a friend. This is this idea of mutuality of a friendship that makes us better. This idea of sharpening metal on metal, iron sharpening iron. Friendship, two people who are making each other better. I was listening to a podcast a couple of weeks ago, it was a leadership podcast. I can't remember who the podcast was, but the guest was Simon Sinek, who has written a lot on leadership and on purpose and more recently on friendship. And he had this beautiful definition. He said, if we want to know what a friendship is, he said, a friendship is two people who agree to grow together. Two people who agree to grow together. Wow, what a great definition of friendship. He actually says that's the same definition of marriage, two people who agree to grow together. And he says, what's a community? Is a group of people who agree to grow together. Now, that's actually what this iron sharpening iron is. Two people in a friendship who agree to grow together, to become more than who we are. And I think this is really profound. This is more than just, hey, someone I like to play golf with, or someone, you know, we hang out with from time to time, or our kids like to play together, or they're on the same sports team and we have a lot in common, so we hang out. That's great. But a true friendship that brings wisdom in our lives is ones where two people have agreed to grow together. In a sense, if I can say this, and maybe you've heard me describe the love of God for us like this, that God loves us exactly as we are. But he loves us too much to leave us as we are, right? Does God accept you and love you exactly as you're here today? Does he love you? Yes. Does he love you too much to let you stay the way you are? Yes, he wants more for you. Why? Because he really loves you. Well, in that sense, a true friend loves you the same way. A true friend loves you exactly as you are. They accept you. They know who you are. And the more they know you, the more they're like, yeah, no, I love you, but I love you too much to leave you as you are. A friend wants more for you. To become someone. That's this idea of wisdom about becoming a person, not just making wise choices, but becoming a person of character. Well, true friendship is helping each other become that way. And think about it. Not all your friends are like that. Not all of your friends have agreed to grow with you. Some of your friends are fools. Now, don't text them that, okay? But I'm just saying, what I mean is they're not unintelligent. They're not mean. They're not uneducated, but they may not be interested in wisdom. They may not be looking for how to grow. They may think, I got this. I'm good. I need everything I got. They may not be taking God into account in their lives, which is fine. That's not for you to tell them to do it. But that doesn't mean that that's a friendship that will help you grow together, because they may not have agreed to that. Some of our friends are just influencers that they're, and we have to be honest, sometimes the more we've spent time with them, we've looked more like them than they have like us. We've become more like the people we work with, or more like the people on our sports team, or more like the friend group we hang out with, and they aren't necessarily people who are pursuing wisdom. And we have some friends who like to pull us down the path or head us in another direction. Not every friend has agreed to grow you, to help you grow. And Proverbs says, hey, a true friend, a sincere friend, a wise friend sharpens you to help you become more than who you are. That's the first one. The second two dimensions of friendship that Proverbs notes are actually like, oh, well, how does that sharpening work? Listen to this one in verse 6. Wounds from a sincere friend are better than many kisses from an enemy. Wounds from a sincere friend are better than many kisses from an enemy. Wow. What are kisses from an enemy? Well, sometimes it sounds like, oh, you're good. You got this. I just want you to be happy. I'm in your corner. I got your back. Right? Those are kisses. Listen, is it good to have friends who are loyal, who are with you no matter what? Yes. Is it good to have friends who say, I got your back no matter what? I'm with you. Yeah, wingman, whatever. Yep. Is it good to have friends who say, oh, I want you to be happy? Sure. But that's not a friend that's going to help you grow. Friendship, those can sometimes just be kisses. And I don't think he's talking about enemies as people are trying to kill you, kiss you. No, it's this idea of, hey, that's not the same as being a true friend. Sometimes a true friend wounds you out of love. And not like they say something mean or they do something that hurt you. That happens in friendships too. A wound from a friend is words that we need to hear but don't want to hear. And that's actually, we find Proverbs saying all the time, why would people reject wisdom? Because in one sense, it's like, well, who doesn't want better outcomes and fewer regrets? Everybody. Yeah, except that sometimes that means we have to hear things we don't want to hear and do things we don't want to do. Sometimes that means we have to change. And we don't like that. And so words, wounds from a friend feel like, oh, that hurts, right? Things about ourselves that we wish weren't true, things about ourselves we thought no one else noticed and then a friend notices, that feels like a wound. But those are actually true friends, people who can tell us the truth about ourselves. And not people who are like, oh, you know, I just tell it like it is. People go around wounding people left, right, and center. That's not a good mode to have. But if we are good friends and we're never saying difficult things to each other, or if our friends are never telling us the truth, maybe there's more that's needed in that friendship for it to become wise. What does a wound from a friend sound like? I just wrote down a couple of ideas of what words that would be hard to hear, but maybe we need to hear. Things like, I'm concerned about you. I see an unhealthy or unwise pattern in your life. I think you made an unwise decision. I wouldn't do that if I were you. You're not thinking clearly. That's a weakness of yours. I've noticed it. You're in a vulnerable place right now. You better be careful. That person or group is probably not a good influence on you. Man, those are not fun words to hear or say, which is why they're not common in friendships. I've been on the receiving end of some of those words. I can tell you, I don't like hearing someone say, I'm concerned about you, or I've seen an unwise pattern. I've had friends say that. Or, hey, you misstepped. You need to go back and fix that. Those are not fun. Those feel like wounds. Oh, I don't want that. Especially in our culture, and there's two reasons why our culture shies away from this altogether. We have confused saying this with being judgy. Oh, I don't want to be judgy. Well, I can't tell people what to do. But can I just be honest with you about that? That's not necessarily love. If you really love someone, and everyone knows there's stuff about our lives that needs to change, that is unwise, that does need help, that does have unhealthy patterns. And if no one's saying it to me, they don't really love me. If no one's saying it to me, they actually love themselves more than they love me because they don't want to feel or risk rejection. They don't want to see my face when they say the difficult thing. They don't want to have you ever had to have a difficult conversation like that? If you're like anything like me, I hate them. I can't sleep. I don't even want to have the conversation. So I avoid it. And if I avoid it, why? It's because I love myself more than I love the person. Because the wound probably needs to be, the conversation probably needs to be had at least sometimes. And if we're never doing it, we're actually preserving and loving ourselves more than we love the other person. So this idea of being judged, we got to get rid of it. Yes, of course, it's possible to be a judgmental person. But that is different from saying, hey, sometimes in true friends, not all the time, but sometimes, and not with everyone, but with certain people, we need to say the truth. The other thing is, we live in a culture that says, I want to become somebody without having to change who I am. Think about that. Oh yeah, I want to become the best version of myself, but don't tell me I need to change anything about who I am. For goodness sake, don't tell me, that's judgy, right? We want to become the best version of ourselves without having to deal with the not best version of ourselves, without having to change ourselves. And that's not possible. True friendship requires sometimes that there will be wounds. And then lastly, not just this sharpening, not just sometimes that we're going to say things that are difficult to hear but need to be said and need to be heard, but also, verse 9, the heartfelt counsel of a friend. Proverbs talks about friends who give heartfelt counsel. And that word heartfelt in some of your translations can be trustworthy or sincere. In other words, it comes from a good place and it comes from a good person, a wise person. There's love in it. That's counsel that gives advice, that gives input, that informs the decisions we make. We need support sometimes after the unwise decisions we've made, but we also need wisdom before the next set of decisions, right? And so if we have friends who are only supporting us but not giving us input, or we only want their support but we don't want to ask them for input, that's not a friendship that will actually help us become someone wise. And so wise counsel is really needed. Not from everyone and not in every relationship, but if there's nobody who we can say, yeah, what do you think? I'm about to do this. I'm about to spend this thing over $1,000. I'm about to consider dating this person or maybe in proposing to this person. I'm about to consider taking this job opportunity at the other side of the world. I'm thinking about whether I should do this or take a gap year or go into this school. Who is giving me counsel? Wise input. And there's extremes here, right? Because we can be in the prescriptive, opinionated, always telling you what I think friend. That's not really a sincere, trustworthy friend who gives wise counsel. So sometimes if we're always in that camp, that's not helpful. But sometimes if we're just passive and listening and we never say anything and hey, whatever you think and hey, I'm here to support you, that's not always helpful either. We need a mix of both. Proverbs says, this is actually how a friend sharpens us as we grow, not just sometimes in hard words to say, but just counsel and advice and wisdom. And so I want to give you just kind of a couple minutes together with your elbow buddy. And if you're not sitting next to anyone, you can kind of move over and find somebody and just discuss this together. We're just going to put up on the screen these three descriptions of friendship. A friend is someone who sharpens you, right? Two people who have agreed to grow together. It's a pretty cool definition of a friendship. A friend who wounds us with the truth sometimes. And a friend who gives us counsel, like offers sincere counsel. As you look at that description of friendship, what of that description is appealing to you? And what of that description do you find, that's difficult? So just take a couple minutes to be honest. We'll give you our magic number for our discussion time at the well here, 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Find somebody near you and just talk about this together. Well, I'm gonna rudely interrupt your discussion here. You can pick that up at the 30-minute party after service today. But I thought, you know, as we kind of tease out that definition of friendship, I want to come back to actually Simon Sinek's description of a community, which I think is actually a beautiful description of the church. A community of people who have agreed to grow together. Friends, this picture of friendship, this is what it means, in a sense, to be brothers and sisters in the body of Christ. That, in a sense, if we are a community like that, that agrees to grow together, do we have friends like this here in our church family? If this is home for you or whatever, maybe say, yes, I do, or this is why I'm a part of this church, or this is what I'm hoping to get. Maybe as you're coming together, maybe you're here for the first time, not just to hear some things about God, but actually, God, I need a community. I don't want to do this alone. Am I the only one asking these questions? No, you're not. Do we have these kind of friends? Are we these kind of friends? In what way does this characterize our friendship with each other? In a sense, a church holds an incredible amount of potential to be this kind of community. But it's really hard. It's hard. Let's just be honest about this. Not everyone who's come to church has agreed to grow together, right? And if you're just checking it out, that's cool. You don't need to step into friendships like this. It's just to begin to say, is this a place where I could have a friendship like that? But it's hard. Because these things are difficult. It's much easier to hang out together. It's much easier to drift to the extremes of being a know-it-all who gives advice all the time and has very opinionated or say nothing. It's much easier maybe to be friends who are supportive and like adopt the values of the culture so that I don't want to be judgy and I just want you to be happy. Much harder to actually be honest and to have the credibility and time, mileage on a friendship where someone actually knows you enough and is close enough to you and trusts you enough that you can say that. There's trust dollars involved if you're going to have those kinds of relationships. And let's be honest, there's disappointment because maybe you came to this church years ago or maybe another church where you hoped that that would be the case and it wasn't, or it was for a while and then it all fell apart. Or maybe the exchange or like trying to take a friendship deeper and you wanted that and the other person didn't. Or what you hoped they would give, they didn't give. That's real, friends. The fact that wisdom is everywhere and that the potential for these relationships to exist doesn't mean they automatically exist. This is a hard thing to work towards. And what does it mean for us to hold up this picture and say, okay, I'm probably not going to have 20 or 30 people like that in a community like ours, but at least one? Or can I work towards one? Could I become someone who's trustworthy and wise? And maybe hopefully in over time, 3 or 4 or 5 people. That's partly why we encourage you to join home groups. Doesn't mean that every friendship is going to be like that in a group, but the potential for those things may exist in youth group, in home group, in Alpha, as we serve together in a church. It's why we encourage you to stay, to dig in, to get through hard times together, for the potential for these kinds of friendships to grow. As we close, I want to tell you a story about my friend, and then give you a bit of a challenge for those of you that are in the younger generation and those of us that are in the older generation. See, I said us. There, I'm very self-aware. But from my story about my friend Dave. Dave is 35 years older than me, I think. He's never quite told me how old he is, but he's a good, I know he's older than my dad, so he's 35 years older than me. And Dave is someone that I met years ago at our church. And he was actually a friend of my dad's. And he was on the board at our church where I grew up. And I didn't know him, I just knew of him. And then as I was kind of leading worship at our church as a young adult, I was maybe 22, 23, Dave would be one of the first people to find me after service, and he always had a word of encouragement for me. And he would like look me in the eye to the point that I was like, okay, but like I don't even know you that well. And he would say, God really has his hand on your life. And at first I'd be like, okay, like I don't know what that means, but thank you, you know. But he kept doing it. And then as I kind of had more opportunities to lead and whatever, and he would see me more, he would continue to encourage me. Then a group of us, some of you may know, just over 20 years ago, it's our 20th year, planted and left that church to plant this church. And Dave and his wife, and most of us were in our late 20s, early 30s. Dave and his wife left that church that they were very comfortable with, that they had friendships in, that was close to their house, to come with this church because they wanted to support us. And in those years, Dave became one of the closest friends I ever had. I mean, other than my wife, I probably talked to him more than anyone else in those years. Countless hours on the phone, in meetings, at his house, as I was kind of figuring out what God was doing in my life and my calling. And then as I became a pastor, he was a constant source of encouragement. And many of you know him because any of you who helped start this church, he was a voice of wisdom and presence in our lives. And then as I became a pastor, man, that friendship ratcheted up. It was iron sharpening iron. I mean, he said I was helping him grow as a friend, but boy, was he helping me. And at times he challenged me. At times he wounded me. But I knew he loved me. And I trusted him. And I looked at his life. And I knew that he was so for me. It's because I knew he was so for me that I could handle the wounds. And he helped me grow as a person, as a pastor, as a leader. And it was all a normal part of that friendship. That was one of the most important relationships in a season of my life where I really needed wisdom. I needed to become somebody new. I needed to grow up. I needed to get more mature. And Dave was a voice and a friendship of wisdom for me. Not just someone I asked advice to, but who was there doing all these things for me. We were growing together. And so here's my challenge for you if you're in the younger generation. When I was in my early 20s, I had no interest in forming friendships with someone who was 35 years older than me. I wasn't looking for friends like that. Those weren't people I hang out with. I had peers, which was great. I had no idea the potential for wisdom that existed in someone at the time I didn't even know. I just kind of was on the periphery, was in this church community, kind of knew who he was. And I wasn't seeking him out. I didn't know what an incredible friend he would be and what a gift of wisdom God would give me through his life for several years. And so just an encouragement to you when you're in that place, don't be a fool who doesn't think they need wisdom, who thinks they got this, and be open to the potential for where friendships could form in maybe some of the unlikeliest places, and especially with people who have journeyed a little longer in the story than you. That's for the younger generation, let's say early 30s and younger. What about the rest of us, older generation? You know, Dave, I don't know what was in his mind, but he didn't start dropping truth bombs on me, and that was his wise advice. He just started by encouraging me. He sought me out I wasn't initiating that friendship. I wasn't initiating that conversation. I didn't even know who he was. He just sought me out. And in the early part of that, all he did was encourage me. He saw me. He noticed me. He was in my corner. He invested. And I don't think he knew where it was going, but one thing led to another. And all of a sudden, he was willing to take a risk to leave. Like when you get to a certain point in your life, the older you are, the more you have to lose. Right? And life has become comfortable. And he was in a comfortable church with a great group of friends and people that he had known. And they had a building and they didn't have any of the mess that we had. We hadn't even started a church. And he was willing to leave the place he knew to go to a place that didn't even exist yet because he was like, I want to be with those young people. I want to pour my life into them. He wasn't cool. We didn't listen to the same music. He wasn't, quote, relevant. That's none of it. He was wise and he was loving and he was faithful and sincere and trustworthy. So if you're in the older generation, friends, as I've said to you many times, in 10 years, the 8-year-olds will be 18 and the 18-year-olds will be 28. And we have about a third of our church that's about 24 and under. We have an incredible wealth entrusted to us as the older generation. How are we going to invest that wisely as we take risks to put ourselves in the place to develop friendships and be voices of wisdom for people who need it? And so here's my encouragement to all of us, wherever you happen to be. Look, it, this is hard. It takes courage to get closer. It takes courage. So here's a couple of steps I want to encourage you to take that will take courage to do. First is just taking initiative. Taking initiative to speak to somebody, to notice someone, to encourage someone, or to ask someone a question around people who are maybe longer in the journey of faith. Hey, I'm wondering about this. Maybe to ask someone for coffee or to meet with you. It takes courage to take initiative. It takes courage to have a hard conversation and maybe a wounding conversation like, I'd like our friendship to grow. That can be a hard thing to ask for and say, hey, we're buddies, but could we agree to grow together? What would that look like? That's going to take courage to have that conversation. Maybe to say, I'm concerned about you, right? To someone you know, that you're friends, that you're going to cash some of those chips. Or to say, do you see anything in my life that would be unwise? Wow, that would take courage, right? To ask someone who's close enough to you to see, hey, do you see anything in our marriage, in my life, in my decisions, in my dating relationship, in the way I use my money, the way I talk and think, do you see anything that might be unwise? Or what do you think I should do? That takes courage. It takes courage to re-engage or engage in a home group. Some of our home groups have become places where deep friendships are formed. Others would say, that's never happened. I've been in a home group for years. That's always a challenge to continue to reinvest when it hasn't happened yet, but the potential exists. What does it mean for you to engage or re-engage, to put yourself in a regular community rather than just being influenced incidentally by the people around you that you happen to be all the time at work or sports or whatever? What does it mean to pick a community to be influenced by? And what does it mean if you are in that older generation to volunteer with our kids and our youth, to just be someone, a voice, before you're ever a voice of wisdom, just a voice of encouragement and presence in their lives. Friends, I have no idea what kind of gift God wants to give you through a friend in this community. I can't prescribe it, neither can you. There's not 7 steps to get there, but the potential for wise friendships exists in a community like this when we say, hey, what would it mean for us to agree to grow together? And my hope and prayer for you is that just like me, very unaware of the incredible gift God had for me in someone that was many years older than me, already in the community I was, that it would surprise you with a gift that later on you go, man, that was a gift of wisdom. That was a true friend.